Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies, and welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I am Sophia. And my guest today, I'm very excited to talk to. So I have Lindsay. I realized I didn't even ask you how to pronounce your last name. Is it Guile?
Guile. Yes.
Guile. Okay. I have Lindsay Guile with me today. And Lindsay, I found out about you through Virginia Soul Smith's podcast, Burnt Toast. Virginia has been a guest on the show. I follow her closely. Everyone, if you're listening, Virginia Soul Smith is someone to follow. And I heard your episode and was like, oh, I have to reach out to Lindsay. I hope she will come and talk to me. And you did. So
I did. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. We're recording this on Monday morning. This is like a great way to start my week. I don't think I've ever recorded on a Monday morning before.
Oh.
So I'm happy this is how my week is starting, doing what I love.
Excellent. Yeah. And we're not like, oh, Mondays.
Right? No, I was very excited. I was like, I emailed you on Sunday. I'm like, ooh, Lindsay, we're talking tomorrow. Like, I was so ready for Monday.
Yeah, I usually don't have to go to work till noon. So I was like, set an alarm so you actually wake up.
Oh, yes. Thank you for doing that. So Lindsay, why don't you start us off by telling us a little bit about you? What do you do in the world?
So full-time, I am a college art professor. But my other job actually is a working artist, and I make really large drawings of women and femme presenting people where I really, seek to discuss like femininity, in like, especially, I'm a little choppy this morning. Sorry. Especially in like that, like anti-fat space, the body liberation space. How do we really look at ourselves and change what we see? Because so much of how each person I know sees themselves is rooted in really toxic parts of culture and things that have made us feel really terrible about ourselves. But really through the work, it ends up being like these nonverbal stories of what these folks have told me as they've modeled. And it's been really exciting, sometimes really heartbreaking, but really powerful.
Yeah. And when you say big, and of course, I'm going to link to all your socials and your website so people can get a sense, but and I haven't seen them in person. I would love to. I'll have to make a trip. I'm accruing a list of people that I need to like visit when I'm in like the New York area. And, but they're huge. They're like 8 feet tall, right? Like they're big. And the ones that are fully nude, like you see everything, and they are powerful and beautiful, and it's, now I apologize, I'm married to an artist, but none of that has yet rubbed off on me. It's like, do you call it like, it's like line drawing? What is it that, what's your medium?
Charcoal.
Thank you. Charcoal. Yeah. Cause it's not like paint and color. It's, yeah, it's charcoal. It's very black and white and shading, and it's just beautiful.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan of working in drawing and in charcoal. I think there's such a subtlety that can be done with it and that can be had. I remember taking a class in like women in early film and just being really entranced by black and white, and how emotive it can get and how expressive it can be. There's so many people out there who paint and who are wonderful at it. I'm a not too terrible painter by myself. But drawing has always just been where my heart's been. And I think that sometimes you can overwhelm people, but in a quieter way. So rather than doing that in color, I do that in size. So yes, most of the pieces are between 7 and 8 feet tall. That's the limit on that is because that's how high my ceilings are in my studio.
Oh, so you would do like 12 feet if you get a bigger studio.
Yes, with a very sturdy ladder system because I'm afraid of heights and yeah, and get a little shaky. But so that's the idea is that they're big. They're quietly overwhelming within a space. Like, I very deliberately photograph the models from below when I work for them. So the figures are looking down at the viewer and to really almost be intrusive because so many of these people have never gotten a chance to own their own space, to be in their space unapologetically. And that's what I think has always been the most important. Even if people are a little more nervous, they're shy, they're a bit reserved, they have a right to own that space and be there.
Well, and like you said, so much of this, the reason why people, I think all people, a diet culture impacts everybody, feel very hesitant to own our spaces that we've been told, unless we are quote unquote perfect, according to like a modern beauty ideal that is being upheld by capitalism and not based in any kind of reality about how people actually look. We're not used to being able to step in and hold that space. And so I think that's what's so fascinating about what you do. And we're going to get really deep into it. But before we go there, what I was really drawn to, no surprise, is your portraits of very visibly fat people and the non-apology of large fat people being large on canvas and naked and bold. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So let's start with you though. Let's start with your relationship with the word fat, your journey with this word. Like starting in childhood to now where you are like taking fat people and showcasing their bodies in a very proud way. Like, how did you go from, and again, I'm assuming here, but you correct me, maybe discomfort or hatred of the word fat to what you do now? How did that come about?
I want to give a tiny content warning because I'm going to talk about eating disorders. So if that bothers anybody, in addition to being fat, I am also quite tall. I'm 5'11". So I've never really fit into a space that was like defined as what women should be. Like I literally cannot get shorter, right? I've always been larger than my peers. Although looking back at like high school, I'm like, okay, I was larger. But there was just always so much uncomfortableness in my body. I'm also neurodivergent. So as I'm recently diagnosed with ADHD, I realize now that a lot of that had to play into how I saw myself, the worries I had, the way that my mind would spin and hyper-focus on what I didn't love about me. I went through high school, I played sports, and no matter what I did, I was always the largest person on the team. Like I played basketball and I worked my ass off. And there was always a lot of pressure to be smaller from my coaches. You know, people would pick on me and make comments, things like that. And then I left high school, became an adult, and I gained more weight. And then eventually, when I was in my late 20s, I got very, very sick. And I had gallbladder disease.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And the doctors were fine with me being sick because I lost weight. And then I got fixed. They did surgery and I started gaining weight. And I developed an eating disorder. And I think a lot of times people think of eating disorders as something that teenagers get. And I developed mine in my 30s. And it was awful. I hated myself even more. And it finally took a panic attack in my apartment during my second master's, my MFA degree. I said, I can either continue to do this to myself or I can pass my classes. I can try to heal. And I white knuckled it. And I really wish I had turned to therapy at that point and gotten help. But I started following fat activists online. I started curating my social media to people that looked like me, and normalizing that for myself. And that was significantly helpful because, like Eddie, you know, millennial, I spent entirely too much time on social media. And from there, I started researching, reading books. And it took a long time for me to be able to say the word fat and feel like it wasn't a pejorative, like it wasn't something that was just so awful against myself, and to reclaim that word. I think probably when it started to get the most neutral for me was when I actually became a nude model myself.
Oh.
So I am a nude model for art classes. In addition to, it's a subject I work with, not surprisingly, when you see my work. And when I walked in and people were like, oh my gosh, you're a great model and you hold great poses. And it was a really different way to see myself and have that experience, that context. And I think that's when I really started to find a peace within myself and look at myself a different way.
Yeah. Wow. How I'm always curious about how families were, both growing up and then as you started just being like, hey, I'm ditching the diet train, and like the letting go of diet culture can be challenging for families. So like, I'm curious, those who, you know, like your closest family and friends, how was that for them as you basically changed the way you view your body?
Oh, you know, I've never even asked them too much about it. You know, it's interesting as my physically, my parents are smaller, and my brother, sister, and I are larger people. I think there was the concern, probably more with my mom, because so many generations that our parents and grandparents are worried because they automatically see fat as unhealthy.
Yeah, the health concerning stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't really say much, but you can see it. You can see the concerned looks and all that. My friends were pretty solid. Like, they knew, you know, they understood what I was going for as I read up, as I found that fat activism space. You know, and I've tried to talk about that even with my family. Like, why this shouldn't be a conversation. Just, we shouldn't comment on people's weight or really anything about them that has to do with like their physical body. I would say it's gotten a little bit better, but in terms of like my family, but my friends are really on board, and it's actually been helpful. Several of my friends have said, you know, I was in this space and I realized what was being said was ridiculous, and this is how I act, advocated for myself, you know. And you know, when I've heard that, they're not necessarily my larger friends, my fat friends, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that process. I have a number of friends and even my partner who've become real allies and also like taking a stand, which is just, it's, I don't, God, is there a bigger act of love? I don't know. Every time someone does that for me, I'm like, you love me so much. Thank you.
And especially with some of my friends, I can, you know, be having an insecure day or week or month, and I'll be like, I'm not sure. And they're like, so like, I think this would be like really normal. It has nothing to do with being fat, or you're just feeling anxious and do you need a hug, or, you know, or they'll sit and bitch with me. And
yeah. I love that reminder to not make everything about the size of your body, because we're so trained for decades that, oh, everything in my life would be different if I lost weight or if I was like a size whatever, which is such bullshit. But, you know, when you're told it and it's reinforced in everything that you see in the world, it's, that's a really hard mindset to shift. It's a hard belief to let go of.
Yeah. And because at least with me, I became so self-conscious about everything, about the space that I took up, right? You know, I'd try to hold my breath walking up the stairs.
Oh, yeah, so no one could hear you breathing loudly. I know.
I'm breathing.
Breathing, I know.
Breathing.
my partner, my husband, and I love to go on hikes together. And when we were first dating, and still sometimes, I'm so aware of breathing loudly. And I get so, I'm like, I can't believe this is still so ingrained in me. Someone who has done this work now for like 10 years, I feel like I've shucked off all of the bullshit diet culture. And then we'll be out for a hike and I'll be like, I'll catch myself trying to hide that I'm breathing because we're walking up a hill. I'm like, oh my fucking God. Like, this is so deep in there.
I have a friend and, well, two of my best friends are very outdoorsy people, and we'll go out painting or drawing, so painting the landscape, or we'll, but there's usually a hiking component because you're trying to find the right spot and you're carrying a lot of gear. And probably the most empowered I ever felt in that space was when my friend was like, if you have to take a minute, let's take a minute. It's no big deal. We'll sit and talk. And, you know, I also have like long COVID breathing issues. So, but then it's like that magnified it even more. But the fact that I can just sit and say, you know what, can we stop for 5 minutes? And it's because they created a really safe space for me to be honest and not self-conscious about it. And that makes it a little bit easier in other spaces as well.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I love that. We need those people in our lives. Oh, yeah, beautiful. Okay, so I love that you kind of, what helped you on this journey was becoming a nude model yourself. Was this before you started drawing, started doing the work that you do? Did the nude modeling come first?
They kind of happened more simultaneously. Once I found the human figure and drawing from the human figure, it was my favorite thing to do. Because I've always loved how unique every single person is and their anatomy and how things, how they move, how you understand them. Like, it was a really great puzzle I love to figure out. And even to this day, I get really excited whenever I get a new model. I'm like, ooh, you know. But when I started looking at the work that I'm doing now, there was a series that kind of preceded that. And it was a series of folks who would send me photos. And when I say folks, it's usually like cisgenders, females, early on. And it was like from collarbone to thigh. And because I really wanted to focus on really the breast, the belly, the thighs. I think that's where a lot of us get really uncomfortable, breasts and chests. And I did a series of like 13 drawings of just that. And actually the first one I did was me. And it's hanging up in my bedroom, even though my body looks drastically different like 11 years later. Because that was the first time that I drew myself. And it was incredibly difficult.
Ooh, what was hard about it? What made it difficult?
It was really hard to see myself. Like, you know, I was so self-conscious about that, those particular areas of my body. Like, I like to pretend I existed from here up. And, you know, from a lot of weight fluctuations, I had draping on my stomach and I always felt like my breasts weren't good enough. I don't know what good enough was. Now I think it's amazing. I'm like, they're nice. Thank you. But also you're putting yourself out there. And even though people couldn't tell it was me, you're opening your body up to that criticism, even in what you think would be more of a safer space of academia. But academia has a history of really promoting just one body type. And people started to come in and they were like, oh, like this is really beautiful, beautifully drawn. I wonder often if they would have said that about had I been there in person. Right. And I think that's kind of what spurred on the nude modeling. So the positive feedback and also the level of skill that I have, I was like, okay, there's something I can combine here, which is traditional drawing skills, but this contemporary theme and looking at bodies. And how do we lift people up? Because there's a hierarchy of art, right? And how can it reframe how we see ourselves? And then I was broke in grad school and modeling paid decent, just partially that. But I'd always wanted to nude model. But when I was a student in undergrad, it felt more like I was not the body type that professors wanted to work with. I had one model at that time who was this gorgeous plus size woman, and I loved working with her. And she was very inspiring to me. And I finally, you know, 10 years later, pulled the ripcord and got up in a class. And I remember seeing the professor earlier in the day, because he was my drawing professor, and he was like, I'll see you later. And I was like, yeah, actually, I'll see you soon. He's like, why am I seeing you soon? I'm like, I'm your model for today. And he was like, oh, I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
And realizing that when you create a classroom that is respectful and honoring of all people who model for you, that's a really positive atmosphere to work in.
Yeah, because I'm just this idea of creating a safest possible space for vulnerability, whether that's leading a workshop or like creating a space for you to be in as a nude model. Do you remember the first time you did it, what it was like in that moment to be fully nude in front of a group of people all on purpose looking at you and looking at you closely, right? To kind of translate it to the canvas. Like what was that moment like?
You know, the model I mentioned who was a plus size model for undergrad, she had the best saying, because I asked her after she modeled, because I was the TA for the class, so I actually was there. And I was like, how did it feel? And she was like, you know, after 3 seconds, I realized they had seen everything and I got down to business. And that's kind of how I felt, right? Like, I'm here to do a job. My main focus was don't move, don't move, don't move, don't move.
For how long do you have to not move?
Sometimes, you know, it's just like 10, 20 minutes. When I was a student, it was very different than what I experienced down here. I live in the Hudson Valley. Like the model would be an hour and wouldn't be able to move. And that was crazy to me. When I came down here, there's a break like every 20, 25 minutes. And as someone who teaches that, like I'm always checking in with the model. I'm like, you doing all right?
Do you need your nose scratched? Like, I just feel like my whole body would start itching if I was trying to purposely stay still.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an itch, you can scratch it. You just have to like put your hand back the way it was. And we realized that our models are people. But sometimes you're like, there is a giant drop of sweat running down my back and out down behind my knee. And oh, my feet hurts. Or why did I do this? My hand is numb.
oh my gosh.
So I really, that's where my thoughts are. Sometimes I plan out ideas, but in the beginning, you know, it was a little bit of like, I hope I'm okay to draw. And it was very empowering to see me in drawings. And even now I only model really in the summers because that's when I'm free, because I'm a professor. And I love walking in and seeing like the people whose eyes light up when they realize that they have a plus size person. Like I'm a size 22, 24. And there are times too when I remember this once I was modeling for a drawing marathon and someone was clearly upset that he had a plus size model because he wasn't drawing, but he was in the front row. So I stared him down.
Oh. And he sat there the whole time not drawing?
He did eventually. I think I made him uncomfortable.
Oh, which, good. Good for you.
Same, dude. Same.
Oh my God.
No, it was just like, I see you, I notice you, and this is not appropriate for this context. You
right?
Draw.
Yeah. Get fucking comfortable, dude. Like, it's a body and it's beautiful. Fuck you. Oh yeah. I would have done the same thing, I think. That's amazing. Wow. And then, so that's how you got into drawing and doing the work that you do now. Before we started recording, I asked you if you could read your artist statement that you sent me as part of the bio that I asked for. And I read your artist statement. I was like, oh my gosh, I wonder if Lindsay will read this to everyone. Cause I found it so beautiful that this is your statement about what you do in the world as an artist and why. So would you read it to everyone?
Absolutely. I am fat. It always shocks people when I say this. They rush to tell me that I am not, that I am beautiful, or sometimes that I am some other more socially acceptable word for fat. As someone who is taller and heavier than the average American woman, I've always been acutely aware that I take up more physical space than is deemed appropriate by contemporary feminine beauty standards. Comments about my weight and physical appearance, how to improve it, is a regular occurrence. The suggestion is always that somehow in losing parts of myself, I can become more. The pressure to conform to the perceived norm that is represented not only in the media, but also when our own cultures and class structures become internalized and the ways in which we see ourselves can become incredibly skewed. Through self-imposed practices and body rituals, the objects that once bound us physically are now unseen, and yet the bindings are stronger than ever. These pieces in particular represent my right and the rights of the individuals I draw to exist as is, in spaces that we have been previously denied. We are unapologetic and resilient, a strength cultivated from determination to normalize all the shapes that our bodies take.
Oh, I literally have tears in my eyes. As soon as you started with, I am fat, I got so emotional. There's something about fucking declaring it. And this is such a declaration. What's it like for you? Said you'd written this 5 years ago and you were thinking about revisiting it. Is there anything that you would change given, you know, who you are now? Or does that still feel true?
I think that I would want to add to it. I don't want to take anything away because that really is the core of where this work started. You okay?
I'm so moved by it. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I want all of this work started because of my journey as a fat woman. And I draw anyone who wants to work with me. And it's not always, although initially it was, I really wanted to talk about weight and how we see ourselves. A lot of the people I talk about issues beyond weight, and their stories are beyond weight. So I wanted it to be a little bit more inclusive of all stories, but I still really like to be focused on size. So I wanted to make a few tweaks here and there just to be a little more inclusive. Also, in a lot of my talks, I use the term women, and although I did change in here to individuals, so I have tweaked it over the years, because several of the people I worked with initially who identified as women have now come out as being non-binary, and I want to make sure that I'm really inclusive of that and that those folks feel welcome in my space. In a lot of my artist talks, I actually start with I am fat. And the look of abject horror on people's faces. And they're like, literally, they're rushed to be like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, no, this is okay. This is not an F word. I understand what I look like.
Yeah. It's so interesting, people's reactions. So I'm a creative writing coach as well as some of the other work that I do. And I'm part of this beautiful studio where whenever we post on social, we wrote our own descriptions for our photos. So it's like so-and-so is, so mine would be Sophia, something like Sophia is a cis white fat woman with short brown wavy hair, nose ring, and a warm smile. Okay, didn't think anything of this. It's just all of us, all 10 of us appear in our photos and we all have our own little descriptions that we have written. Interestingly, two phrases that we were using, that a few of us were using, started to get a lot of reaction from our community. One being the word fat, the other being middle-aged. Because a few of us were like, you know, so like, I think one of my other ones is like, Sophia is a fat middle-aged woman, da da da. And people were really like protective, like, no, don't call yourself middle-aged. No, Sophia's not fat. And it's like, I think there was an assumption that we hadn't chosen these words, these descriptions for ourselves. So when you say you stand up in front of a group of people and you're like, I am fat, and people are like, no, it's like, no, I have chosen these words purposefully to say. And I'm fascinated by the immediate, visceral, emotional reaction that people have to a word that goes, I mean, of course, it goes against everything we've been told is okay, right? So, yeah, I can just imagine you standing in front of a group, starting by saying, I am fat, and then just seeing their faces. Like, I almost want to, like, photograph that split second after and see the faces. How do you, like, oh, and there's something just so powerful in owning it. What's it like to be there in that moment, giving a talk and starting with that?
It is such a relief.
Yes.
After years of dancing around it and pretending.
Yeah, like hoping no one would notice. That's what I always used to do.
Hoping no one would notice. Like, I want to disappear, right? it is about standing there and being visible and honest, like very brutally honestly visible, and that there's nothing wrong with that. Like,
hello, Fat Joy friend. I'm popping into this episode to give you an exciting update. Fat Joy is now ranked in the top 2%. 2% of all 3.4 million global podcasts, which is a really big deal. You may have heard, because I've been talking about it, that I am aiming for this podcast to hit the top 1%. And you can help the podcast get there by making sure you've subscribed to the podcast and giving us a 5-star rating. And if you want to be a little extra, I love extra. If you've gotten something out of these episodes, if they've supported you in some way, please write a review for the podcast. I love these. I put them all on the website. They mean so much when they come in. No surprise, I believe that fat stories are worth telling, and I am so grateful to bring you a new story each week and honored that you keep coming back to listen. So thank you, lovely, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
I have such a great platform as an artist, but also as an educator to stand up and be like, this is me without apology. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, maybe someone in that audience, even if it's just one person, says, oh, she's saying it. It's okay.
Yes. Like the fat activist that you started following when you needed, just same with me. When I started changing my social media feed, I was like, that was a huge thing. So I always recommend that everyone listening start to follow diversity of size, you know, ethnicity, sexual orientations. Like if you scroll your Instagram or your TikTok feed and all you see is thin white people, you got some work to do, is basically what I tell people. Like, stop it, do better. Yeah, that, like, being able to just name it, own it, and be like, and it's okay. Like, you're making it okay for them to be okay.
Yeah. And it's going to also make some people in the audience uncomfortable.
Yeah. Which is it fun?
No, oh, it's so much fun.
Right? I know. I love it too.
Yeah. I'll get you there eventually. Right? Because they're going to be like, well, why is it okay? Like, and then sometimes in artist talks, you'll get the concern trolls, the like, but what about this? What about that? I mean, I had one guy once say, well, but you were normal during my eating disorder. He said, you're an eating disorder, now you're fat, but why couldn't you be normal?
Oh, God. Even that fucking word normal. I think if there's a word I hate, it's normal. What's normal?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, my favorite reaction to once was I was watching a gallery where I had my own solo show, small, like 5 pieces. And a guy came in and goes, looking at my drawings. And one of them was me, large and in charge, naked on page. And then he turned and looked at me and goes, you must be the artist. And I was like, I am. Thank you. And he went on and on because he thought he was very self-important. Because what else would he do? And he was like, well, I wouldn't hang any of these in my room. And I was like, I was in the town where I teach, so I had to be professional. Part of me wanted to be like, I'm not here to be a part of your spank bank, bruh.
Right?
These aren't sexualized in an overt way. And actually, it's something that I'm more comfortable in a non-sexualized space because so many other areas bodies are sexualized or fetishized. And I was just like, whatever.
Yeah. Right. And again, like the male privilege of assuming that everything that is made visible to them should be for their fucking pleasure. Ah, just like that assumption, that arrogance drives me so bananas these days. I can't do it.
Yeah. And I like to think, you know, that my work comes from a more of a female gaze perspective. Like,
it is
hopefully this like, non-judgmental, not overtly sexual, comfortable space that uplifts.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you're clarifying that even though the drawings are nude, and in some of them you can see vulva, you can see everything. They're, when you say they're not overtly sexual, like what does that mean to you as an artist? Is it in the pose? Is it in the way? Like, how do you convey nudity without it being sexualized?
I think a lot of it is in the pose. And when I photograph the models, I also talk with them. Also, any model who shows their vulvas very openly, like if they might be squatting or something, I ask them if that's okay. And if they're, and every model has a right to tell me that they don't want something photographed. So tertiary answer to your question is,
no, that's good. Consent's important.
Yeah, fully consent-based atmosphere. I once had a model say, I really don't want anyone to see my vulva, but they can see anything else. Well, I was like, okay, we'll photograph it. And I have even no pictures of her vulva, right? And that was really important. So, and I was like, you can tell me to stop at any time. Any of the stories you tell me, I give artist talks. So I'll ask if I can share this in an artist talk without saying your name. So it's very much consent. And it's interesting when we think about sex, because it's something sex or sexuality or sensuality. It's something I've thought about because I think some of the people that I've worked with are a little bit more inherently sensual. And that's part of their empowerment. But as the artist, sometimes like that, I'm uncomfortable with my own sensuality at points. So I think it's just something I naturally stay away from. But I have a burlesque belly dancer who wants to work with me. And that's so a part of who she is. So I'm like, maybe I have to revisit this and really work with someone who that's the source of their empowerment. But it's a sensuality and sexuality for them. I think there's a difference between the performative aspect for another person and maybe for yourself. I wish I had a concrete answer for that. I don't.
No, I love this. I feel like this is my coaching hat's about to turn on because I also do coaching. But I'm just like, I'm so aware that like, I imagine this is going to be such a beautiful experience for you as well. Kind of actually being in that space, being present to the sensuality, feeling your own stuff come up and then having the opportunity to like be with that. Oh my God. I feel like that's actually going to be so powerful. I got goosebumps when you're talking about it.
Yeah. And like, I know that I'll be uncomfortable, but in like a good uncomfortable way.
Yeah. Right. Like a growth way or like an expansion of my edges way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
I learned so much also by working with the models. I mean, it still very much is helping me on my journey because I don't think that's a journey that ever ends.
Ugh, no, I haven't had anyone say it's ended for them yet. And certainly not for me.
And what they have, what I don't even say what they teach me because I think they're just sharing their story, but what I learned from their stories and the honor that I have to be able to share that, but also how it changes me as a person. Probably one of my favorite sessions I had was a repeat session with someone. It happens every now and then. And she came in and she was like, I don't want to talk. I think I mentioned this on Virginia's podcast, but it's my favorite, so I'm going to repeat it. She was like, can I just move around? Because I have emotions I have to get out. And you can photograph it. And I said, absolutely. And we probably photographed like 10 minutes, maybe 15. And at one point she was like dragging her hands down her body. And I knew the shot when I got it. But right after that, she started to cry very hard because of the release. And I set my camera down and she was like, well, you can keep photographing. I said, I'm not interested in photographing this extraordinarily intimate moment because that would have felt exploitative to me. Like, yeah.
Oh, I'm tearing up. Like you got to hold this space for her to be really present. What she was experiencing. Oh my God. This is where artists are. Oh, like it's incredible that you can have that space be available to someone with the safety, Like, oh, wow.
And it's not something I can do all the time.
Yeah.
So I did a ton of photographing 2 years ago when I did a residency, and I've done a few intermittent sessions here or there, but the drawings take a while and I photographed way too much 2 years ago. I'm still getting to people, but I also have to be in a mind frame where I can hold that space, where I have to be aware that I don't know what's going to come up. So if something is triggering, I have to make sure that I'm strong enough in my own space to be able to handle that, because it's not about me in that point. So there's times when people say, oh, I want a model. I'm like, I'm not photographing right now, but I will let you know when I am. And sometimes that is because I'm busy, I'm teaching, I'm grading. And sometimes it's just, I'm not in the best space for this at this moment.
Yeah, it reminds me of when, like, so I do a lot of group facilitation of very vulnerable spaces. And there's this whole thing where you have to be present to what's happening, but also almost have like an observer self of what's happening in the larger space. Are people safe? Like, having both presence and observation hats on is actually a really hard thing to hold. Is that kind of what you're speaking to?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and it requires a lot of like labor, a lot of energy to hold both. And you're right. You do have to be really like resourced within yourself. It's exhausting.
Yeah. And then I go and make a 7 to 8 foot drawing.
I just, oh my gosh. Wow. How long does it take you to do a full drawing?
It kind of depends. Sometimes if a model doesn't have a lot of tattoos, I'm going to tell you anything with tattoos takes the longest. I'll talk about that in a second. I've had some work up as quickly as like 12 to 15 hours. I think my longest is a piece on my website called Unwavered. And it probably took around 60 to 70 because my model is very heavily tattooed. And she's actually a tattoo artist. So it's really cute. She called herself a doodle bear. And like the unofficial title of that piece is Doodle Bear.
That's amazing.
But yeah, so sometimes, I mean, some of my favorite drawings are the ones that are just simple and they're just, I love sculpting the flesh and it'll work quick. But I also do more than one at one time. I actually work on 3 at a time because that's what my studio holds.
Oh, cool. And so you kind of like go back and forth between them.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Whatever one I feel like I'm in the mood to work on. It's actually great, again, because I do have ADHD. So it's very natural for me to like jump around.
Yes.
And that gives me the ability to do that and still feel productive. Yeah. And if there's a piece, like right now, I'm actually doing a drawing of myself. I haven't done one in 5 years. So I was like, okay, now's the time. And I was like, ooh, maybe I'm not in the mood. I actually talked to my therapist about it. And she was like, well, you don't have to show anybody. And I was like, yeah, I do. I have to post on Instagram. She's like, you don't actually have to. And I was like, I do. She's like, Lindsay, no one's going to notice. And I was like, okay.
Right? Yay, therapist. Shout out to therapists. Yay. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And did that help, that removal of the expectation that you had to share it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what was kind of shaking me up is I haven't drawn myself since I've gotten tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. You've got some gorgeous ones.
And which is also a part of my body liberation journey. But now people are going to really know it's me. And I was a little shook up because I've had in exhibitions where people are like, oh, does that look like the person? I was like, I don't know. Does it? You know, and
you're like, let me take my clothes off and prove it. No, just kidding.
But I'm also going to be having a solo show at my work in April and at the college. And I'm like, oh, my students are going to see me nude. And it's funny because I've mentioned, they're like, yeah, we don't care. We know what work you do. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But like, I have these like very identifying markers now. So it's like reassessing that feeling. Because again, that body image is not just woo like this. It's like this.
Yeah. For people listening, like in the video, Lindsay like waved her hand up and down. Like it's not like a straight up. It's like we come to and from our our body image journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. What? Here's a weird question, but I'm curious. Like, what does it require of you to do this work? Is it like courage? Is it vulnerability? Is it resilience? Like, what would you say is the trait that you have that allows you to come back to this work? And not just even doing the drawings and the photography, but like you're taking, this is like a political stance you're taking, right? Like a social justice stance. So like, what is it inside of you that you think, oh, I'm so glad I have this because it allows me to do this work and hold this space for myself and others?
Yeah. Gosh, no one's ever asked that. I love it.
Yay. Good.
It's probably going to be cheesy, but it is like that it helps. I think my whole life I've always been someone who wants to be a helper. And I think that's what it is. Like, because of the reactions that people have, and not even like, oh my God, you make such a great drawing, which is wonderful. Like, I'm not going to say, but like when people say like what you said, like, this really hit me, this made me really emotional, I see myself in this work. That is not me, but it looks like my body. And why don't I see the value in my body the way I see in that drawing? And the fact that I have that ability to do that, is what makes it really important. Like, sometimes I'm like, well, should I change up the series? Like, I've been doing it pretty consistently since 2019. And I do other work on the side, but, just cause that's where my brain wanders sometimes, but I think it is that. And I genuinely love drawing, and I'm a very observational drawer. And I love working with the figure. So it kind of all wraps up together in a really nice, neat bow for me. Well, somewhat messy bow sometimes. But I think it's that. I think it's that, like, I have the ability to help people think about themselves in a different way. And that's important to me. You know, I had a friend once tell me, she's like, if you hadn't been an artist, you might have been a therapist. And I was like, yeah, probably. But I really like working with the people. Probably one of my favorite interactions with a model seeing their piece, because not everybody always does, but she had been a former student of mine several years ago, and I had a really small two-person show, and she came early to see the piece, and I saw her in front of it, and she was crying, and I said, you know, are you all right? And she goes, you made me beautiful. And I said, I didn't make you, you weren't already are. Like, you were already beautiful. And that's like, yeah. And I think beautiful, a lot of people just think, oh, it's how you look, but I think it's this inner beauty that might come out, or you feel the sense of worth or pride or power or calmness. Like, it encompasses so many different things in that way. And that was kind of like a tertiary moment of like, I can do this, and it helped.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yes, yes, yes. It does help. It absolutely does. And that sounds, again, coaching hat on, like, I would say that's obviously a really probably top three core value of yours, which is, yeah, so connected to holding space for others. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really excited. I have, I'm getting ready to start two new drawings in my studio. And one is a very dear friend of mine who was visiting a few months ago. And we talk a lot about my work. And she was like, all right, we have a little bit of time. I want a model for you. So we ran to the college because that's where I photograph the models. But she was like, you know, she has PCOS. So it's polycystic ovarian syndrome. And that has really shaped her body in a way that we don't see that much, right? She's got very broad shoulders, very lean hips. And I know she's okay with me saying this. And she was like, I really want to do this so that other people can see what a PCOS body looks like. And that it's wonderful. She's like, this is the body that helped me have my two children and so much of the struggle that went through. And I'm really excited to be able to tell her story because I've been a friend of her since I was 9. And, you know, I was just like scrolling through her photos going, which one do I want? Because again, she's been one of my dearest friends. So, you know, I'm also like, this is how I know her. And I'm like, oh, but is that the best draw? Like, but for some of it too, I mean, I draw folks I don't know, but for the people who I'm really close to, there's also my emotion in there as well. Like, I genuinely love this person and I'm so proud of them for putting that story out there.
That's beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad you got to do that, because I think also too, one of the challenges with fatness is that there's like, I don't even love these words, but the quote unquote acceptable fatness is like the one that's still an hourglass figure. So a differently shaped fat body, we see even less of. So that's really exciting that she, yeah. Was it weird at all? Like, no. That's amazing.
Before your listeners, I am a professor who teaches figure drawing. So like, I am pretty much unfazed by people's nudity at this point. Right. Like, so I think she was pretty comfortable. It's actually not the first time she's modeled for me. Back in my early, early series of just the torsos, she was 1 week postpartum and modeled for me.
Oh, wow. Again, another amazing body to see that we don't see. Ugh.
The other drawing I'm getting ready to start is with a woman who's 8 months pregnant in the drawing as well. So, you know, I think the more I talk about this, the more people are coming and saying, like, this is something that I want to share and for people to see my body and be visible. And like I said, while I work with anyone, like, I get really excited when I've got fat people who are like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm ready, draw me. And I'm like,
yes, yay. Oh my God. That's amazing. That's incredible. If someone did want to model with you, do they contact you? How does that work? Is that how it goes? Or do you reach out or?
It's actually interesting. I had a bunch of people lined up when the pandemic hit and I was like, no.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you can just reach out. Several people had recently. And when I get to the space where I can photograph again regularly, I will. Like, my friend is, I don't see her often, so I just kind of slipped her in. But you can email me, lindsayguile@gmail.com. You can message me on Instagram. And if you're just going to be in the area a short amount of time, I can work something out. Basically, once I get through my large amount of models from 2 years ago and get everybody drawn, then I'll put a call out again.
Ah, perfect.
But yes.
Cool. Oh, I kind of want to.
You should.
That'd be so fun. I feel like, I don't know if you feel like this, but as I kind of started this journey, probably about 10 years ago, because I'm 43 now. I started it.
Oh, I'm 42.
Oh, yay. Hello, elder millennial. And all that entails. I feel like I keep hitting kind of like next expansions of my fat liberation journey. One of my big expansions was the first time, oh gosh, this is probably about 8 years ago, where I did my first boudoir photo shoot, which was very much like, I think I needed to feel sexy. So I did like the lingerie and the very glam. And I actually, in about 2 months, I'm doing another boudoir photo shoot. And this one I feel totally differently about. I feel like what I actually want is basically to be nude. I'm not really interested in lingerie. And I just like want kind of, I think they call them like white sheet, where you just, and I want my roles. I don't want any smoothing. I don't think this photographer would do it anyway. They specialize in this kind of stuff. So, and it feels more like who I am just fully. I don't even want makeup or hair. Like, I really just want to be me. And so I can imagine like a next level would be like, you know, something like what you would do, which is like the full photography of all the parts. And just, I don't know. It feels exciting to keep expanding on this journey and like try new things and how, I like the discomfort. I like, cause then I always tell my clients, it's like a little bit of discomfort, like a little bit of nausea is good. Like, you know, if you feel like you're fully going to puke, no, but I like that little bit of nausea to indicate that I'm stretching an edge. And I imagine like for a lot of people who come to you, that it's an edge for them, right? Like you said before we started recording, this idea of that people get to be a piece of artwork. That's amazing to me. That you create that for them.
Yeah. And really it was looking at, I think I may have mentioned it before, but while we were recording, but like the hierarchy in the art world, or and there's such a history of portraiture and patrons and the wealthy and whatever wealthy people. I mean, if you want to buy me artwork, we're good. But like that you can be a piece of art and you can see yourself in a different way. And I think it's just this funny little switch in the brain. It's not a photograph. It's something that someone spent a lot of time on. And it's not just the click of the image, but I spend, you know, 60 hours sometimes with your image, right? With you. And how it's just like kind of beyond intimate at that point. But the sessions, when I do them, like it's really also self-driven by the people. Like I've had very funny sessions, very solemn sessions. Most of the time I'm on a really low rolly chair going around the podium. So it's either that or I'm sitting on the floor to get the underneath angle. I'm switching lenses. Like, it's probably not as like fluid as a boudoir session, but you know, I'm adjusting lights.
Yeah. Oh, so cool. I think it's amazing what you do. And I cannot wait for people to actually like go to your website, go to Instagram and like see, because it's very different to for us talking about it, for them to actually then go and see and have the full impact of the artwork. It's really, really profound. I was really moved when I, after Virginia's podcast, I was like, oh, I must look immediately. And it was like, whoa, this is incredible.
Thank you. And actually, one of the first image on my website is actually a picture of me with the work. It's funny because I'm kind of shaded because the gallery had lit just the artwork and turned all the other lights down. So it was really amplified. But I post that so people can get an idea of the scale.
Yeah. And you're 5'11".
I'm 5'11". So yeah. It's pretty large.
Oh, it's incredible.
One of these days it'll get bigger.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. Lindsay, I want to come to joy now. So I feel like kind of like the word fat, the word joy can mean lots of different things to different people. What's your relationship to joy?
Yeah, it's like what makes me happy. It's very different than joy.
Right? Yes. Yes. I hate the word happy. It's so like, it's kind of become very meaningless to me. I like the word fulfilled, and I like the word joy, and I like the word awe. I feel like those are three states that somehow marketing has like made into the word happy, but it has lost all meaning with that word happy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think with me, joy is something that's very quiet and intimate. It's really like those small moments when you can really feel it for yourself. Excuse me. And you don't always necessarily have to share. You know, it could be like reading a book on a gray, rainy day, which it is here. I really wish I could stay home today and just read. Or, you know, in the case of with drawing, which is doing just a piece that you really hope that person is proud of when they see it. And that I get joy because hopefully you bring them joy. So for me, it's quiet and intimate.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. Lindsay, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for the beauty and the art that you're bringing into the world. And just thank you for showcasing our bodies.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope that is exactly what I can keep doing, which is elevating particularly fat bodies in my work and showing people that they deserve to own the space that they have. And we don't have to make ourselves smaller to fit in.
Mm-mm. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. This poem by Pablo Neruda called Keeping Still. Feels so good to share after Lindsay's episode. The way Lindsay interacts with form, how she takes motion and aliveness and snapshots it into drawings that are still and yet also so alive is amazing to me. So Keeping Still is what I've chosen for this episode by Pablo Neruda. Now we will count to 12 and let's keep quiet. For once on earth, let's not talk in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. A moment like that would smell sweet. No hurry, no engines. All of us at the same time in need of rest. Fishermen in the cold sea would stop harming whales, and the gatherer of salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and go for a walk with their brothers out in the shade, doing nothing. Just don't confuse what I want with total inaction. It's life and life only. I'm not talking about death. If we weren't so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and could maybe do nothing for once, a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves, of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth could teach us. Everything would seem dead and then be alive. Now I will count up to 12 and you keep quiet and I will go.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.